Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine podcast. I am your co-host, Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, back in Oaktown, back home, no longer in residence, your host, chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Hello, Jason.
Welcome back.
Thank you. I am no longer held hostage in a hotel for 18 nights.
Good for you.
Good for you. I'm pretty much over it. I can say that with some authority.
Well, a lot happened. A lot's gone on.
A lot did actually happen.
We got a lot to talk about. I got some things. I suppose at some point you'll probably Columbo me and say, oh, we didn't talk about this. We can do that too.
Okay.
We should start with your reviews, though. So you had two reviews posted in the last week. So we should at least make note of those.
Okay.
The first of which is Get Shorty.
Oh, yeah.
Which the short version of that seems to be... and I think you alluded to this last week, which is, why would you make this show? Oh, it's good. A little bit like Fargo, I think.
Very much like Fargo, yeah. And it's great for Epix and their business model, because the first two I was, you know, clearly not fans of the comedy Graves and the drama Berlin Station. Although some people liked Berlin Station, I was not a fan of it. And I remember distinctly a year ago that press tour that they were very disappointed and annoyed with my criticism of their two first efforts. But, you know, a year later, they make a much, much better series. And yeah, it was really good. I don't know how people are going to get to it. My feeling is, you know, if you pay for Epix, great. If you don't pay for it, I think you'd have to wait a whole year, because I know the other two are available, but you have to pay for them when they're on Amazon.
Oh yeah,
a year after the fact. And maybe they put them on earlier, I just never noticed. But there is no free version or streaming version of this show. If they do put it up, I would say it's worth it. I mean, depending on the price, if it's $2, I would pay that. It's pretty nice.
All right, and Atypical is the other, which again, I think we've mentioned before, but your review is up now, so we should at least mention it. And this one, Not so much.
It premieres tonight. I think somebody told me that Netflix hates the word drops. It drops on Netflix. So
it will
not
float
a record,
into your Netflix tonight.
It will appear in the ether tonight. And no, it's not very good. It's like the third that I can recall. There might be more series about autism. And it just... it's not done very well. The pilot is actually pretty good if you were to watch that first half hour. And the star of it, Keira Gilchrist, is good, this teenager. But no, it just sort of devolves into these other cliches. It becomes kind of a network show, and not in a good way. I mean, Speechless is a much better show on ABC. I know they're different issues, but... No, it just doesn't handle it well. For me, I know I should get over this by now, because as you and I have discussed, Netflix is not really... a lot of the first things that they did at the beginning, you thought, oh, this could end up being like, they could be a premier outlet for content. But they're really just all over the board. They're really gigantic broadcast network. And so maybe the new modern broadcast network. So not all their stuff is good. I always expect it to be good, and I hold it to a higher standard, hoping it's not quote-unquote broadcast stuff. Atypical was a disappointment in that regard.
Okay, you have, and as we record this, it's not up, but I suppose it will probably be going up soon. There is another, I can't believe I'm even saying this, there's another installment in the all-new Power Rankings, this time comedies. And though I haven't seen it yet, I have on good authority, which is you, that it is happening soon at THR.com.
Yes, it is.
Oh, look, it just went up. It went up 5 minutes ago as we're recording this. So there it is. Boom. We just summoned it.
Awesome. That is great. Yes, so number two is up. How about that? I know. It's everybody just says, what is happening down there? And I did write that from down there as well.
So, and this is the, is it the same concept where it's like, it needs to be kind of on or recently on?
Yeah, within the first year. And it allowed me, you can see what number one is there probably.
Yeah, it's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a shocker for some people, but It's not to me. I think that's long overdue. But what I loved about this little format is that, you know, it is the longest running series on that comedy list by far. And part of these things are to get people caught up on things that, you know, this first two batch of essential stuff is like, if nothing else, watch all of these comedies and watch all of these dramas before you start any other comedies and dramas, because these are the ones you have to see. And I think that's really true on the comedy side of Sunny. Now, I don't think you're going to go through, 12 plus seasons or whatever they've done. But I love the fact that it's still on. It's a super long-running comedy, and it falls within the parameters of having the last series within a year. In fact, I think it finished in January of this year. So, yeah, it fits, and it's I was happy to reward them.
Now, your list here, which I think goes in, it's absolutely in the Tim Goodman tradition of who needs round numbers, just when you do your 42 best shows of the year and all of that.
Right.
It's 16. 16, because there were 16 that you felt were deserving of a place in the rankings.
Yes. How about that, huh?
And you thought about number 17, and you're like, no. So that means you have the ability to look at a show and say, yeah, I'm going back to 15 now. Or you have the ability to add a show in. If a show muscles its way in, you don't necessarily have to knock the show off the bottom. Although you could. I guess it's just up to you. You can do whatever you like.
Yeah, it's I have been thinking about other plays, and I think as you well know, and I'm sure I'll be visiting you for off microphone advice on this. I think the hard part is going to be when it swings back around. I'm going to hopefully put out 4 or 5 of these that are different. After mm-hmm. this one, they're going to be a little bit more eclectic. I have enough ideas for I think 3 really good ones after that, and then we'll see what happens. But then I think they're going to kick back around, and then the difficult part is, okay, do you add on to the list? Because these are kind of, you know, standards. Is there going to be one that falls off the list because it's quote unquote not good enough? That's tough, because that's how it used to be with the power rankings. Things would fall off if they had a bad week. But a lot of these shows, I mean, some of the dramas and some of these comedies are still in production. So if they have a bad season, maybe the end of the season, they'll drop off. But I think I see more adding on than dropping off. But I think what might drop some of them off is they're going to come out of that year period. They'll have been away for a year, and then they'll have to fall off. But yeah, it's fun. I got to give them credit. They've been doing a good job of grabbing photos and getting it all up for me. It's nice.
And I'll just throw it again that I appreciate that you've got, I mean, it's a great list. I haven't seen all of these, but I will have to, you know, but really the ones I haven't seen are already on my list because I talk to you every week. But Happy You're the Worst is on there, which we should say the eternal question, which is when is You're the Worst coming back? And I say that because that's what my wife asks me all the time. When is that coming back? Because she loves that show so much. And the answer is next month.
Yes, September.
September 6th, I think. It is right around the corner now, which will make her very happy when she comes home today, and I'll tell her, ask me that question. I know the answer now.
So
need to get on that. As you say, time to dip a toe into the acid of You're the Worst, and then revel in watching how it's got the sweet center. Inside, you just got to go through the acid.
It does have the sweet center. I got to tell you something that, you know, because we're handing out the praise. One of the things that I really like about having someone else do all the formatting, other than it's a hassle,
and find the pictures.
They picked great pictures, and you know, a lot of times I guess they just have better choices than I can see on the computer. But they're pulling up good picks. Like this People of Earth picture makes me want to watch it. Mm-hmm. It's just, I'll go through these and I just laugh, you know, Better Things, Perfect Picture, Master of None. So yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah. And I actually enjoyed the You're the Worst picture, which does not show the leads of the show, but
yeah,
you know,
I know
any picture of Kath or Donahue, I'm okay mm-hmm. with it.
Yeah.
So,
and yeah. And it's good because I think what made that show get better is when they expanded beyond the main characters and they kind of grew up their cast.
Yeah,
having
Edgar and Lindsay as another kind of orbiting the main pair makes that show, I think, a lot more dynamic. And
yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And they're great characters. So, okay, great list. People should check it out. I'll put a link. Now that there is a link, I'll put it in the show notes that you can get at theincomparable.com/TVTM/142. Or you can just go to THR.com and click on sites, because that's where Bastard Machine is found, is in sites. It's a great site. It's my favorite site on THR.
It's my favorite site on a site. I don't have any control of that.
No, I know. I just like to mention that.
Although I will tell you a very spin-off tiny story about that. I hadn't noticed that we were doing this on the THR front page, but I was scrolling through some TV news while I was in LA, and it said something like, oh yes, you can see it up in the top right now, featured sites. And I remember thinking, oh, featured sites, it's probably we share something with some other thing, some other venue. But no, it's featured sites within a site.
Yeah.
And so it's there.
It's a play within a play. It's fine.
Yeah.
Netflix. Lots of Netflix news.
Oh, my God. Some pretty interesting ones, right?
Yeah. So I want to run through them. We have another cancellation. Is Gypsy, the Naomi Watts show on Netflix, canceled after a first season, not coming back. So we'll add that on the bonfire of Netflix is starting to cancel shows.
Yeah.
The Coen brothers they backed the truck of money up to the Coen brothers. Or should I say they shot the Coen brothers in the face with money? We'll get to that. That's a reference. But they're going to do the Ballad of Buster Scruggs, which is a Western anthology series, which I laughed when I heard that, because that's like the Coen brothers saying, what's the most unsellable idea we have for a TV show that they would never let us make? And Netflix said, here's a check. Go make it. But still, it's Coen Brothers TV show, so that's interesting.
It is very interesting. It's you hit that like totally on the head, because I remember because it's funny, like the John Landgraf from FX, the mayor of television, the creator of Peak TV, the person who speaks to us like a graduate thesis. And this year, nothing was more smart and
No, I have a whole section in here we got to talk about Landgraf.
Yeah, so he did that. But of course, right when he was doing his thing, Netflix announced the Coen brothers. Now, look, that was not accidental.
No. No, I was actually working in the backyard. I was writing an article, and I flipped open Twitter, and I saw that as it happened, and I just started to laugh. It's like, that's like people talk about that like some tech company will do an event, and then Apple will put out a press release about something, and they're like, damn it.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's not an accident. No.
Yeah. They were trolling FX on that. And I think it was like happening right when he was talking about. Yeah. Definitely when he was talking about.
Is he on stage? Okay, post the press release.
Post it, yeah. But you know what's interesting about that, beyond the the trolling, was that I think the initial reaction was, oh my god, like Coen brothers have been lured to television and Netflix got them and blah blah blah. And it took a long time. I don't remember seeing anything even in that wheelhouse, but because I was listening to what Landgraf was saying, but boy, you really hit it on the head. Like, I totally think the Coen brothers are like, okay, yeah, you want this? All right, awesome. Here's our anthology Western. I mean, it could be utterly fantastic, and I would love that. And I think they would like to dabble in television. I think that they would like to do that. But yeah, I don't know what we're going to get from them. So that's definitely, it's really interesting, because I'm preparing, I won't be able to do it this week, but I'm preparing a Netflix piece, and it plays into it. Like the Coen brothers, they're going to get a lot of attention from them. They do go out. I think what you're seeing now is this definite change inside. I mean, they just canceled Naomi Watts' thriller and like after one season. So they're not putting up with failures anymore. It's really interesting.
I can go either way with this. Like, my initial reaction, is basically, okay, it's an anthology series, and Netflix is like, yeah, okay, I guess. And I said, and it's a Western. All right.
Are you sure?
But if you think about it, like, I don't know, I don't know if they said like how involved they are, if they're directing and writing all of it, or if they are producing but having other people. It seemed unclear to me exactly what their involvement is.
Yes.
Actually looking here, I'm looking on THR and it says written and directed. Okay, so they're going to do it. And I start to think, maybe, just to be charitable, these guys have thrown around this idea of like short stories about a legendary figure, which is Buster Scruggs, who has been cast and is going to be Tim Blake Nelson, right? So he's going to be in every episode, even if it's an anthology, presumably. And they thought, wouldn't it be a fun thing of like this legendary figure, or maybe not legendary figure, who has all these things in these different kind of Western stories? Maybe they thought that was a movie. Maybe they thought that was a miniseries. Maybe they thought that was a short story collection that they were going to do someday. And they're like, oh, this would be a fun thing to do on Netflix, is tell six different stories about this guy. I can see it. And they're incredibly talented. And I think one of the great stories of our time in the entertainment industry is how artists who previously would only have worked in film now look at the landscape in film and think, maybe we should do TV. Like, we have more creative control and can do more interesting things on television than we can in film. And you saw it, like Steven Soderbergh's a great example of that. And he's now doing something weird and experimental back in theaters with a movie he's just essentially distributing and marketing himself. But he did that with TV as well. And here's the Coen brothers. And it's like, I could totally see if you're the Coen brothers, maybe you can get your movies made and it doesn't matter. But they're going to be creative people who are so frustrated with working in movies and look at the freedom that, at least right now, at least more freedom that they might get in streaming. So to have the Coen brothers come to TV at all, I'm really interested to see where that goes and what this is and whether it ends up being like a tossed off project that they don't care about so much. Like, I think maybe Woody Allen's was, or whether it's something that's like just like one of their films, except it's, you know, in six installments.
Right.
I don't know.
I'm all in already. So it's, I am certainly more excited about this than, you know, David Lynch coming back to television. Yeah. So.
Well, and the Coen brothers are really still in the prime of their careers, arguably, right? This is like high powered, a little bit like Steven Soderbergh doing The Nick, where it's like, this is not a kind of slowing down, retiring, going to do some projects on the side to cash in. It doesn't feel necessarily like that, but we'll see. So the other person, speaking of retirement, that we need to talk about is David Letterman. Is also coming to Netflix with a show, a six episode talk show something next year. And I have to say, when he retired, I think we talked about this when he retires, like I couldn't see him not doing any projects. Like Johnny Carson just was never seen again, basically. Right. Because, and I think we cited at the time when we were talking, like Seinfeld is a great example of having that show that is, he kind of indulges his own interests and makes a thing and has something to focus on, but it doesn't take up the level of attention that it would be to do a more, you know, a more intense, long running show. And here it is, right? Which is, he's going to do six episodes. He can kind of do them however he wants. And it allows him to keep his, you know, keep some skin in the game without having to go back to work and completely fall out of retirement.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're totally right. I think he just couldn't do it. I mean, his quote was funny about asking, you know, if you want to spend more time with your family and kids, ask them first.
Yep.
That's funny. But yeah, he's always kind of, he was off for a while. So I think he relaxed, and he's always been somebody who kind of needed to do something. And I think he sees the opportunity to do something in a limited setting. And he's going to do it. I love it. I love that he's back on television and will be back on television. I want that to happen soon. And you know what? I want HBO to get on it with John Stewart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Letterman thing. Yeah. I watched that National Geographic thing that he did, the episode he did where he went to India.
Yeah.
And it was really good. And I mean, he wasn't the producer of that or anything, but just as a presenter and narrator, essentially, like, it was funny and interesting. And I thought, this guy's got, you know, he's got stuff to say. He's got energy in the tank. He just doesn't want to do that grind of that he did for all the time. And I think he wants to do something that's not going to be compared to that, something totally different. And when he was on Norm Macdonald's web show, I watched the episode that he was on of Norm Macdonald's you know, YouTube talk show, basically. And it was very clear from that that he was asking actually Norm Macdonald questions about, like, how, you know, what is this thing and how do you get this to work? And it was very clear that the wheels were spinning about, like, him putting together something. So great. I want to see it. I always considered it really sad that Johnny Carson alluded to that he might have future projects when in his last episode. And then we, other than showing up on Letterman a couple of times, we never saw him again. So, you know, today you don't have to put together a big production necessarily. You can go to Netflix for 6 hours. And so, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's great to have more Letterman. And I'm curious to see what they do in terms of what that show looks like. Like, they say it's a long form interview, but also other stuff. So
yeah, other stuff. Know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, what is that going to be? I mean, it says he's going to be out and about. He'll be talking to people basically on the street. So that's, I think it's going to be part of him roaming around like he does in New York, which is great. And then part of it will be, I think, him being able to get into substantive interviews with people he likes. So you can't miss with that, I don't think.
Yeah. So Netflix still doing interesting stuff. All right.
Yeah.
Let's talk about John Landgraf, the mayor of television, as you said, because he came out and did his sort of state of the city of television.
He really did. Yeah.
Address. And I was reading the stories about this, and it's amazing. So how was it? How would you I've got some stuff that I wrote down, but I'm just curious as the person in the room, like, tell me what the mayor had to say.
It was, it's interesting because, you know, it's like, you know, it's funny now that he's sort of done that, like, people were never going to let him forget it, obviously, but he's basically, he reiterated what I said a while back, like, that these lower tier cable channels might fall off, or they might, there's definitely going to be some contraction, but the upper end's still going to be churning it out, and, you know, wait until Apple gets in there, and you're still going to have all this content on the high end. There's still going to be enormous amount of television. It's not going to go away, but players in the business will go away. So he kind of echoed that as well. He also had some really, I think I talked to one person and she was just like, I feel like I just was at a graduate thesis class and I'm not awake yet. So it's really hard for me to, like, figure this out. And he had some pretty big thoughts about, like, who will survive and what will it take for the littler guys? I mean, they've pretty much given up that FX could ever be like Apple or could ever be like currently Netflix or even Amazon. And he doesn't really want to be that. I wouldn't even know what to do with that amount of money.
I've got that. He said, nobody is going to hand us a check with an extra $10 billion to go spend on content. And by the way, I don't think I'd be the guy. I don't think I'd be good at spending $10 billion more on content because I'm not interested in making the world's largest all-you-can-eat buffet with something for everything, which is snarky, but it's also probably a real bit of self-analysis of, like, this is what he thinks he's good at, which is this kind of really tight curation of the stuff that he's doing for FX. And the job at Netflix is a very different job because you do need to have something for everything, for everyone in all sorts of different regions. It's a totally different game than the game that he's playing.
Yeah, I mean, it's totally different. Just to give you a sense of how things started off, you probably don't have that with you, but I can read it and blow your mind. But, like, he was talking about, I mean, he started with, like, market economy conversation within the first 3 minutes. You know, he was talking about oversupply, marketplace demand. Here, just listen to this just for a second. I'm gonna read this thing, and you. And I know you have your own stuff, but just for a second, you can realize what it was like in the room, knowing that he hadn't even sat down to talk yet. He was just talking at the dais, and he said these words. And I quote: "In my opinion, if we want to understand the roots of the underemployment and stagnant wage growth that has afflicted the U.S. economy, and that underpins today's uncertainty, anger, and political polarization, we should look no further than the lack of market regulation that has, over the last 40 years, allowed one sector of our economy after another to be swallowed up by a single company or a tiny handful of giant oligarchs. We are no longer just talking about utilities, monopolies, duopolies, and triopolies. We are talking airlines, finances, most physical and online retail, internet search, internet advertising, user-generated video, social media, ride-hailing, online payment, and many more. Remember that too big to fail wasn't even a thing until pretty recently, and on, and he goes about these things. And you're like, oh my God, what?
Yeah, he also, don't forget, he made everybody look up the word monopsony.
Monopsony. He said monopsony, and a part of my brain, like a synapse, snapped. I said monopsony.
Somewhere, Ken Burns nodded.
Yeah, Ken Burns said, yes, yes. Well done. Mm-hmm.
But not near you. Smart guy. The other thing I wanted to say about him, well, first off, he's the one who said, it's like getting shot in the face with money.
That was the answer to my question, by the way, at the end.
Oh, yeah?
I was content to not ask a question. I have access to him pretty easily. But he did bring up Apple, and no one had really been taught. And I had asked a few Apple questions earlier in the, cable portion of the press tour. And then, you know, it goes away, right? And then it's all networks. And then the bigger networks, they tack on their cable portion, like Fox and FX. So, you know, he was here, and the time was running out, and I couldn't get anybody's microphone in, but John Solberg saw me waving from the rafters, and he was like, all right, I got the last question, and I asked him about Apple, and so he's obviously went into that. But yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, I was honestly, I'm glad you did that, because that was the thing that, thinking about our conversations, that I was thinking, which is, you know, all this talk about peak TV, and he's the one who's talked about peak TV, and he measured the number of shows that are on and all of that. And then we started talking about Apple, which is like, okay, you can't be at the peak if you've got another player rolling in here with billions of dollars to spend, right? You can't do it. And so I'm glad you asked, and I'm glad that he responded with the money quote of the TCA. and he also, I had to laugh, because we, again, everybody who listens to this show knows TV Critics look at the number of shows that are on and just kind of go, oh my God, like, no, make it stop, right? So he pointed out that there are, if everything that's been announced is made, that's 141 streaming series, which would bring the total tally to 534 scripted series, up from 455 last year. It won't probably be that high, but as he concluded with a smile, as the THR report tells me, it's going to continue to grow. So peak TV continues, the money will continue to be shot at people's faces, and that's just where we are. Another thing he mentioned that I wanted to ask you about is streaming services. So FX is going to have a streaming service that's actually like, or a service that's like with Comcast, which is really interesting, which is a, you pay a monthly fee, and it's, and you get to watch their shows as soon as they drop on linear TV. So that's kind of like HBO Go, where as soon as the episode gets started on broadcast, you can watch it and without commercials.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, and then AMC also announced it. So we got more streaming services being announced. Disney announced that they're going to take their stuff off of Netflix, or at least some of it off of Netflix, and they're going to start their own streaming service. And that's not the one that they're doing with ESPN as a supplement. This is yet another Disney streaming service. So we've got more people wanting to go into your pocket for $4, $5, $8, $10 a month as part of the great kind of cord cutting unbundling that's happening.
Yeah, and you know, it's yeah, and there's more of that. I think it's exciting. I think I don't quite understand the knee-jerk reaction when people say, I mean, it's a funny joke. You can say, oh, there's going to be so many streaming services that you buy them all, and then you're paying more than your cable bill. Yeah, I mean, that's the easy way to look at it, right? I mean, that's a funny joke, and it's certainly a reality if you were not paying attention to your checkbook. But I think choice, Jason, is the bigger issue there. Like, you know, you can say, yeah, I don't want to pay $175, which is what a lot of people pay, and more, for their cable. And if you could cobble together, you know, an ESPN, a local sports, an FX, now we're talking branding more than ever, which has been a thing that John Landgraf has talked about. He said it 3 years ago when he said, in the end, it'll be the big brands that survive. And Kevin Riley came in from TBS. He was one of the very first people who spoke on this issue. And he said, we're going to be fine, but a lot of people are going to go away. And it's funny because I wrote a column on that. And I basically said, everybody in cable thinks they're going to be fine and everybody else is going to go away. But don't all these big guys have worries too? And Landgraf told me that like that was part of the impetus of like trying to come up with something different this time, and dig a little deeper, which is what he did. But yeah, I mean, it's all brand. Like I would like, I think this is a turning point. If you gave me the choice, and maybe, you know, one of the upcoming power rankings is going to be like ranking the best channels and cable and network in a row. I might not do that until September, when everybody's out, because I want it to be, I haven't been able to figure out, maybe you can help me on this, the parameters. I mean, would it be like rank them by what they have actually available right now, or rank them with what they have produced and is in the vault, which that part kind of seems more like an app based, you know, maybe top ranked apps. I don't know. But, you know, the gist of what I'm trying to say is that if you gave me a chance to pick just the premier sites, I would pick HBO and Netflix and FX and maybe local sports, and I'd be totally fine. Everything, and then, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's all I need. I don't need any, I would pick AMC too if I had the money for it, but it's all about choice. It's not about saying you're going to pick 30 different of these skinny bundles and make it a fat bundle and replicate your cable. I think it's like you become decisive. You have to make tough cuts, but it's also about choice. It's like, yes, I don't want ESPN, and I do want, you know, CSN Bay Area for $5, and I'll take, you know, HBO and FX and shit. If you got that, you got it. So it's good. Oops, check the box.
I'm going to check the box.
It seems like that's kind of a waste. So I just kind of haphazardly said shit. I didn't actually blow my mind and like,
yeah,
scream.
I mean, okay, I think you half-assed it. Then
I did kind of half-ass
it haphazardly. It's just you half-assed it, because we can say that now.
I almost didn't. It's like I almost didn't give a fuck about what I was
saying. Oh, hey, okay,
all right.
Now we got it. No, I one of the things I noticed, somebody was somebody I saw somewhere expressing frustration about, oh, all of these services, and you know, the truth is, you don't have to watch all the shows, right? Like literally, you don't get to. I mean, are you paying your cable company now for the every channel available package? Like, right. At some point, you're just going to have to decide. And what's tough about that is that the competition among all these streaming services, they're going to want to give you things you want to see. And then you're going to have to decide for yourself. But that's fine. Like, you don't have to watch every show. And the nice thing about these streaming services is, for the most part, you just cancel one and spin up another one, and you can also do that. They want you to stay, you know, HBO wants you to always be a subscriber to HBO, but you don't have to be. You can drop off and then come back, and you hear about some great new show and it's on some service that you don't have, you know, you could choose to pick it up for that, or you could choose to just let it go by, and that's okay. Like, that seems to be where we're going with this. I've heard from people about Star Trek who are like in the US and Canada where they don't have Netflix, and Les Moonves wants them in the US to subscribe for CBS All Access, and they're like, yeah, I'm not going to do that. And it's like, well, that's your choice. You know, Les Moonves would like you to pay to watch Star Trek, and people will. And if enough people will, that'll be how it is from now on. And if not enough people will, then maybe it'll be on Netflix instead. But this is where we are now, is you got to pay for this stuff, and you don't have to watch everything, which is good, because that would be very expensive if you paid for everything.
I mean, just choose wisely and then spend as you can, as you're, and I'm sure as people go through their lives, their, you know, their pocketbook and what they can do with it is going to fluctuate. So you would change, and your interests are going to change. You know, it's like, I remember a time when I couldn't live without ESPN, and now I barely watch it.
Yeah, same. I think we talk about Netflix canceling shows. The time is coming. And it won't be for a while, because everybody's gearing up now. But there will be a time when there is going to be a serious winnowing of streaming services, where some of them are just not going to make it. Somebody's going to say, oh, we thought we had a brand that people would pay $5 a month for, and we were wrong. And then that stuff will get handed somewhere else. It's totally going to happen. Or they'll get bundled together, but it's still like waving a white flag and saying, oh, this couldn't make it on its own. We have to stick it with something else. And for those people who wonder what that will look like, look at CISO, because this week CISO basically said it's shutting down. Mm-hmm. That's NBC's little comedy streaming service. And all of its originals are like moving to, or many of its originals are moving to other services, because they're shutting it down. And you know, that will happen again, and it will keep happening, because not all of these things are going to make it. Not everybody, you know, it will be a finite market, and some of them will do really well, like Netflix and Amazon aren't going anywhere. But will AMC Premiere make it? Maybe, maybe not. I mean, they got The Walking Dead. That's not bad, but
yeah, that's They can win on that. That's sometimes alone. That's what you want. Yeah. But yeah, it's going there. By the way, I don't know if you have any more John Landgraf moments. Do you?
I don't think I do.
Okay. Well, I have one that was a Jason Snell moment where I was like smiling broadly thinking, if only Jason was sitting right next to me, he'd be like, you would have perked right up and you would have thought you would have been able to tell me if I was that true or not. He actually said, so Landgraf says towards the end of his thing, that he thinks the future could possibly hold an alternate broadband system. That there would be dual broadband systems.
What does that mean?
Okay, so this is what he said. Okay, yeah, see, this is interesting. He thinks there's going to be, let's see here. So I guess my answer is that there's going to have to be an alternate broadband system. He talked about how Asia and Africa have no, you know, tracks from cable.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, so the question of whether all of them will do it, two of them will do it, three of them will do it, one of them will merge. It's a massive capital allocation to get there, but ultimately there will be a 5G alternative.
Okay. Well, mm-hmm. I mean, one of the thoughts is that ultimately there will be competition with cable, and it'll be wireless. That at some point, the wireless networks will be able to be a viable alternative for broadband to your cable connection. And depending on where you are, I mean, like I upgraded my cable connection, but at one point my internet connection was slower than my cell phone. The difference is that my cell phone only wants me to use like 10 gigabytes of data a month, and my broadband connection will let me use a terabyte, which is, you know, a lot more, like 100 times more.
But, right.
But, you know, he's not wrong that technology advances, and ultimately you got to think that wireless broadband will be able to do this stuff, and it's going to be cheaper. Even if it's expensive, it's going to be cheaper than laying cable everywhere.
Right. So he predicted that maybe depending on how big these phone companies get, that maybe two or three people, whether they join together or not, there could be two or three of them trying it and having these, you know, talking about how rural America doesn't even have stuff anymore.
Right.
It'll all be alternative. And that was his prediction of where things were going to go because he's talking about how the content is not going to slow down. If these big companies keep churning it out and if everybody starts going to digital, and one of the things he said, which you already clearly know, and I think people who use the internet know that, he just said, so that's my view of how you deal with the one set of challenges you have about getting the content there. And he goes, by the way, the backbone of this current system, the most concurrent streams anybody's been able to serve in America at this point is, I think, 5, 6, 7 million. We're nowhere near the ability to serve over the internet 110 million concurrent streams,
right,
which is the Super Bowl or most major sporting events.
Right. And that's probably something like BAMTech, the Major League Baseball people who are now 75% owned by Disney that can stream like HBO Go. But it's not there yet. It's still, they're still building it out because if you have to stream to every single device, your network will die, your servers will die. Yeah. Interesting. Really.
Yeah. It was a head scratch. I mean, it wasn't super early. They started started at 10, but boy, it was quite the college lecture from, John Landgraf.
Monopsony.
Monopsony.
The secret word is monopsony.
And he says monopsony is a dominant buyer. Now, if you don't need to read too much into that to know what he's talking about, Netflix.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And the best parallel I could give is something like Walmart, where if you make bikes or, you know, anything, but bikes is a friend of mine was talking about that on another podcast. You got to be in Walmart. Like Walmart is going to Walmart buys everything. And now Amazon is kind of like that too. So in TV, you got $6 billion at Netflix,
And you got money at and Amazon, and then of course Apple's coming too. And he said, he goes, I love Apple, but he goes, yeah, you're gonna get in a situation where you have, that's a lot of money for those three companies to be throwing at people.
Right.
And then he went on to say, also closed it out basically by saying, oh, get wait for the coming talent wars, which is great. It's true, right? I mean, we talked about that at some point. The Coen brothers are a good example, but if you move that over to actors and actresses, you're going to be paying them a ton of money to do TV.
All right. So we're going to wrap it up here with Tight and Bright.
Tight and bright.
But we will be back. It's unclear when we'll be back. We'll try to be back. I'm on vacation next week. I know, Tim, you're going somewhere. We're going to try to maybe squeeze one in sometime for a couple weeks hence. But we will be back. But we will take a little bit of an extended break. So forgive us. This will not be us missing. This will be us skipping. We're doing it on purpose.
Yeah, we're doing it on purpose.
And summer break.
Yeah, and I'm not going to Columbo you here so much as I want to take a little moment here to I don't know if you've seen it yet, but my Vogue on Poetry made a little GIF that is beautiful, not only for TVTM, but for Bastard Machine, and it's very nice.
Yes, he made an animation thanking you for your survival of the Death March with cocktails.
And, yes, it was very nice of him, so that was good.
We retweeted that from our Twitter account, so you can go to twitter.com/TVTM and you can see my Vogue on Poetry. It's nice.
Yeah,
animation.
Very nice. Very nice.
And okay, so we will be back maybe in a couple of weeks, but we will be back. We shall return. And then we're finally going to be able to answer your questions and letters, which have been building up. So tweet at us at TVTM, email us podcast@tvtalkmachine.com, and we will see you in a few weeks. Tim, have a good weekend, and I'll see you after my vacation, hopefully.
Okay, see you then.
Bye, everybody.